What's up, Browns fans? This is Kylie from Canton, Ohio. Let's kick this off.
Welcome to the Dogs Podcast with your hosts, Blake Reniker, Zach Kopp, Justin Charles, and Josh All.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Dogs. Thank you, Kylie, for that awesome introduction. I think it holds a special place in Justin's heart. As always, we're looking for more fan intros. Head to thedogspodcast.com. Tap leave voicemail in the drop-down menu to get your intro on the show. Today we have Barry Shuck from Dogs by Nature back on the show to break down some training camp news and his thoughts on some position battles. Before we get to that, remember to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Just a couple young men on the TikTok game. And if you're a Browns fan, jump on there and defend us a little bit. The Ravens fans are always coming at us on there. Also, please remember to subscribe on YouTube. Remember to tap that notification bell so you never miss a new episode. As some of you know, we've recently created a Patreon page that you can join by heading to jointhedogs.com. We put extra episodes up there as well as articles. Our regular episodes go up early. Sometimes I just hop on and make a post and say like what I'm thinking that day. We just try to interact with people as much as we can. We get a lot of fun interaction with everyone. It feels like a fun Brown community is kind of coming together already. One member suggested we do a Patreon members fantasy football league. We love the idea, so we're going to roll with it. If you're interested in playing some fantasy football with all of us, join the Patreon and let's have some fun. The league or the leagues, depending on how many people we get, will be free to play. And the winner of the leagues will receive some free Dogs merch. If one of us happens to win the league, then we'll just give the merch to the Patreon member that finished highest up in the league.
Win one of us.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which is going to happen.
Very confident. So...
You know, we really think this could be a lot of fun, become a yearly thing. The Patreon's super fun because it's just kind of like a group of Browns fans hanging out in a space. And doesn't matter where you're at, if you're in California, Ohio, we can just all hang out and talk every day. It's pretty fun. So head to the jointhedogs.com, become a Patreon member, and get ready to lose to me in fantasy football. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So please do that. It's going to be awesome. So as I mentioned, we have Barry Shuck from dogsbynature.com on here with us again today. It's been a little bit. How you been, Barry?
Hey, I've been real good. This is an exciting time for the Browns and teams like the Cowboys. So the Browns are being supposed to make the playoffs and maybe make a Super Bowl run. And of course, the Cowboys are already penciled into the Super Bowl and we'll finish 8-8.
And win the division.
Yeah. I think 8-8's, I don't know. I'm not a McCarthy fan, so we'll see. 8-8 could be a good year for them. So we'll just dive. We got some questions here. We'll just dive right into it after I fix my screen. So this first one here, it has to do with our linebacking crew. Do you think we're going to keep five linebackers again? And if so, which five do you think make the roster?
Well, let's look at last year's rosters for game one, because the entire coaching staff is the same, and defensive coordinator Joe Woods is still installed. So let's see what they did last year. When Joe Woods started last year, he was said to be a 4-3 guy. B.J. Goodson was lined up as the middle linebacker, backed up by the rookie Jacob Phillips. And then journeyman Tay Davis, who's kind of been gone from team to team. Mack Wilson played the weak side backer, while his backup Willie Harvey and undrafted free agent rookie Solomon Ajayi. And then the strong side featured Sione Takitaki with Jermaine Grace and Trayvon Young as his backups. Montrell Meander was signed to the practice squad. So at the start of last year, that was 10 guys on opening day with 9 on the active roster. Now, later, Jermaine Grace was assigned to the practice squad while Trayvon Young went to IR, and Solomon Ojai was later cut. But that still left 6 guys, and then the team signed Malcolm Smith. So 7 was their magic number for this group. Now, until October, they claimed Elijah Lee off waivers, which made 8 linebackers they finished the year with. But the 4-3 ultimately became the 4-2-5 for 67% of plays. And for 9% of plays, the 4-1-6. So how many linebackers do you really need?
That's kind of what we've been saying, I think, right, guys?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I see Walker. I see JOK as a safety linebacker hybrid. I see Phillips. Yep. I'm going to say Taki Taki's still going to be around. The new guy we just drafted, what was it, Fields?
Yep.
And then I don't know, Mac Wilson. I think Mac Wilson's got an uphill battle to make this team unless he really shows us something in camp.
I don't think he makes a team. I think he gets cut.
What do you think about that, Barry? You think Mac Wilson's kind of the odd guy out?
Well, this unit had quite a few returning players this year with Malcolm Smith, Mac Wilson, Taki Taki, Jacob Phillips, and Elijah Lee. That's quite a few for one group. For now, the Browns officially are not listing a depth chart until they get knee-deep into training camp. But let's look at some projections. If we start with the 3-4, the mic is going to be Anthony Walker. I think he'll be backed up, and this is just a depth chart. I think he'll be backed up by Mac Wilson and, like you said, the rookie Tony Fields. The Will linebacker will be, I think, is going to be Jacob Phillips. I think he's ready for that. He's had a year of seasoning. I think JOK will be his number one backup, and then Elijah Lee as the third. And then the Sam linebacker, I'm going to put Taki Taki in there. I think he's earned that spot with Malcolm Smith, and they're listing Curtis Weaver as playing a defensive end but also playing a linebacker. That could be his backup. Wouldn't y'all think that the big question with this group is how many do they keep?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Because I see us going heavy in the DB department, keeping a lot of defensive backs, especially with the kind of scheme that Joe Woods wants to play. I don't know if there's room for 7 or 8 linebackers on this roster.
Yeah, let's just say 7. Let's do Walker, Phillips, and Taki Taki as starters. Malcolm Smith was second on the team last year in tackles, so he and JOK are locks. Well, that's 5. The Browns are a club that puts a lot of emphasis on special teams, and Elijah Lee led the team last year in special team tackles. So let's make him that 6th linebacker. So to me, it comes down to the fifth round rookie Tony Fields and the veteran Mac Wilson. To me, with Wilson being the odd man out.
It's kind of what we've been saying all, and it hurts me to say that because Mac Wilson is a person, I love the way he's bought into Cleveland, and I love his mentality. He just struggled so much last year. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, Mac Wilson was one of the guys we were like waiting for him to come back last year to get on the field to kind of help us at that position, and didn't go the way, you know, the Browns fan hoped he would go into that following the 2019 year.
So many missed tackles. I mean, it was
absolutely.
It was crazy.
Absolutely, the top 3 tacklers last year were B.J. Goodson, Malcolm Smith, and then Taki Taki. And of course, Goodson's gone, so you got to keep the 2 top tacklers from last year.
For sure, for sure. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out once we get into camp.
Yeah. So next question here for you, Barry, has to do with Grant Delpit. You know, we're around, you know, 11 months removed from his injury last year in late August at the during training camp where he tore his Achilles. Will he be ready, you know, to go full go start of camp? Are we looking at, you know, is he going to be ready start of the season? And then what kind of immediate impact do you think he'll play for the Browns this season?
Well, the good news is that an Achilles injury is an injury that an athlete can come back fully. It's not like something in the knee or the back or the neck. So he'll be he's completely healthy. He's completely ready. He's already penciled in as the starter opposite John Johnson. However, you're going to see the 4-2-5 quite a bit with Ronnie Harrison at the 5th defensive back if that is not another cornerback on the field. I think either Harrison or Delpit could possibly become that 2nd linebacker in the 4-2 with teams that feature the short passing game quite a bit, especially to tight ends. Both these dudes are great against tight ends, especially Delpit. you know, he's 6'2", 213 pounds, and has that long reach. Now, Ronnie Harrison will play quite a bit and is expected to fill a key role and may play like a starter in the 4-2-5, but it'll be Delpit who will initially be expected to become that impact player in center field.
Yeah, no, I think I completely agree. And I think that Ronnie Harrison, you know, he was big for Cleveland last year, you know, when we were able to get him in, get him going, get him on the field. He always stood out. You know, our defense obviously was very lackluster, and he was one of the bright spots. So glad, you know, that we're still going to be able to find a way to get him on the field. But also, you know, I think here all of us here are excited to see, you know, is Grant Delpit what he was supposed to be with all the hype that when we drafted him.
Absolutely. I love Ronnie Harrison. He's going to play quite a bit, but he's a tenacious hitter. He doesn't miss many tackles. He seems to always be in the right spot at the right time. And he's a young guy, too. But you think about it, if we've got John Johnson, Ronnie Harrison, and Grant Delpit, and if they're all playing up to expectations, what better trio is going to be in the league but these?
Right.
I completely agree. That the defensive backs that we're going to be bringing onto the team this year, it's so night and day compared to last year. If all these guys are healthy, I mean, you're talking just in that secondary too, you got, you know, Delpit's a playmaker, Troy Hill's a playmaker, John Johnson's, I mean, we got playmakers now in that secondary. Greedy, if he can come back, he was a playmaker in college. So, I mean, Joe Woods has some pieces to play with this year.
Absolutely. All the above.
All right, Barry. So, a lot of Browns fans are excited for OBJ, myself included. So, do you expect him to start week one? What is your opinion or view of OBJ? And do you think that we'll see first half of the year Baker Mayfield, or that, you know, more loose, open-minded, you know, who he can throw to, Baker Mayfield, from the second half? And, you know, why do you think that, you know, the OBJ experience hasn't paid off?
Well, I honestly think that OBJ this year will be like a woman who has just got divorced from her man.
Wow. Well, that's exciting.
Now, what do I mean by that? Well, when a guy splits up with his girl, he drinks too much and he hangs out more with his friends. He goes to clubs and other outdoor venues and plays a lot more video games. Whereas a woman will break up from her man. She'll lose 10 pounds. She'll buy new shoes and clothes. She'll do her hair differently. And when her former beau sees her in public, he goes, "Damn, she's looking fine." The thought process being, look at what you gave up and look at me now. Mm-hmm. We all know that OBJ's time in Cleveland has regressed. He's had subpar years. He is no longer drafted in the first round of all fantasy leagues. Look at all his Instagram videos on his rehab and tell me you don't see a dude who is on a mission from God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's funny, because before the show we were talking about the girls taking their Instagram photos from just the right angle with the right amount of makeup and the filters just so the Instagram account looks really good. So you're right. That is exactly what OBJ's doing. I mean, he's posting those videos on there to say, look at me. Look how good I look right now.
Yeah. What Browns fans must remember is that Cleveland is not a passing team. They want to cram the ball down your throat, and every single offensive lineman they have that are starters and backups are great run blockers first and foremost. Jedrick Wills is a four-year starter in Alabama, was a run blocker on a team that pounded the ball. Why did Andrew Berry sign Jack Conklin? Because he blocked for Derrick Henry, and they ran folks over. While with the Giants, they ran some and threw some. The Browns run a lot and throw only when they need to. And a lot of those throws are to tight end. So receivers on the Browns aren't going to get those catches like with other ball clubs. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, I do. 100%.
So OBJ is in a fighting battle, he is in a position that he's not going to get the ball in an offense that chunks the ball quite a bit. So, of course, his numbers are going to be down. But now that he's had an injury, a serious injury, he's already come back 3 months earlier than he should have. That's usually a 12-month injury, and he's only been out 9 months. I think he'll be ready opening day, and I think he's on a mission to prove that, yes, I'm still the darling of the league. Yes, I'm still what I used to be. And, well, let's look at the hard numbers. In 2014, in his rookie year with the Giants, he caught 91 balls and was targeted 130 times. By his third season in New York, he had 101 receptions with 169 targets. Now, his first year in Cleveland, where he was relatively injury-free, just 77 receptions and 124 targets. And that is taking into account that Jarvis Landry is wanting the same amount of balls thrown his way as well, and he made the Pro Bowl in OBJ's first season in Cleveland.
I think I kind of have an opinion on the OBJ thing not paying the expected dividends yet for Cleveland. I think if you look at it, his first year in Cleveland, it was with a Freddie Kitchens-led offense. Statistically, he had over 1,000 yards. Jarvis had over 1,000 yards. Nick Chubb rushed for over 1,000 yards. So on paper, it looked like we had a good offense, but everybody who watched that team knew that we were stale and stagnant, and we only scored points and got yards because we had talent. There was no scheme involved, nothing like what we have now with Stefanski. So he came in handicapped by a terrible offensive scheme by Freddie Kitchens. The next season, before he gets injured, he's playing with a brand new coach, a quarterback who's in another new system. All this talk about how Baker was better without Odell, I think it's less to do with Odell and more to do with the fact that Baker just was finally getting comfortable in the offense. His fourth offense he had to learn in 3 years. So I think
I agree 100%.
So I think I think this is going to be the first time we see OBJ come into the Browns team healthy, with a Baker who's comfortable in a system and a coach who understands like how to use his players. So I'm looking for a big year out of OBJ. Maybe not 150 catches or whatever, but I'm thinking he's going to have a very solid, solid year.
Yeah, and something you said a little bit ago, Barry, remind me of a topic I think we just mentioned maybe one of the last two episodes, but as far as OBJ in the run blocking game, how is he as far as run blocking, Barry, from your perspective?
Oh, he's excellent.
Okay.
He's absolutely excellent. Now, he's not Jarvis Landry excellent.
Jarvis with those crackback blocks, baby.
Yeah. He's not Rashard Higgins excellent, but he's a good blocker. He knows how to sustain blocks. And what I mean by sustain is hold somebody's shoulders pad. And, but that's yep. what you do in today's game. Mm-hmm. I've talked to some guys I did an interview with offensive guard Dan Fike, which will be coming out in August. And he told me that as long as you kept your elbows tight to you, you could hold on to a guy's shoulder pads. But once you extend that arm, then it was automatic holding. He said, but today they get away with a lot of that. Well, that's every player holding on to everybody's shoulder mm-hmm. pads. But you have to be able to sustain that block, and OBJ does that.
I think it says a lot about OBJ. He gets a lot of flack. People try to say he's not a good teammate in the media and stuff like that. But you have a guy who's considered a star wide receiver, and he still goes out there and blocks. A lot of times your star wide receivers, they don't want any part of blocking.
Well, every receiver is look at me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has been that way for forever.
Yeah, forever. Every receiver is look at me, and that's no different. He is just another one on those lists. At his time with the Giants, you could put him on the list with T.O. and Ocho Cinco and Randy Moss. And, you know, all of those guys are look at me and pay attention to me and look what I'm doing and where's the camera. But if you also notice that now we don't have a new head coach. We don't have a new offensive coordinator. We don't have a new quarterback coach. They're all the same. And when is the last time that's been?
Never.
Yeah, ever.
Marty Schottenheimer years?
Unless we wanted to keep bringing Hugh Jackson back.
Yeah. That was the year I was born. It was 86.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
It's everybody's the same. So the system is the same. The schemes are the same. The hand signals are the same. But the most important thing is that now we have a great offensive line. You know, when we had Hubbard and Robinson on the corners, I do a column after every game called Brownies and Frownies, and they were in the Frownies every week. Every week. And, you know, I pay attention to that. I'm not looking at the ball. I'm looking at the play. I'm looking at what's going on in the interior of the line until the ball is thrown. Then I look at downfield blocking, and I look for, you know, moves and stuff. But I'm looking at the line first and seeing where the holes are being made and seeing where the protection is. But they were horrible, absolutely horrible. Well, now we have protection. And when your offensive line is bad, then interceptions go up, incompletions go up, hurries go up, quarterback hits get elevated, pressures go up, your running game goes down, your running game average goes down, rushing touchdowns go down. All of that is because of a bad offensive line. Well, now Baker has a good offensive line 2 years in a row, and now they've got good depth. I don't know when Chris Hubbard's coming back, but they drafted a guy. And Michael Dunn, I think, is going to be an important part. And then they've also got that rookie that they had last year, Nick Harris. Mm-hmm. So we've got good depth this year, and hopefully we don't have to have somebody like Blake Hance show up and say, you know, pizza delivery. Oh yeah, I can play. Right. Yep.
But it was impressive that they were able to do that. But yeah, love all that, Barry. Let's hit you with one more question before we get you out of here today. And it's a big one. I think it's a question that a lot of Browns fans are asking, and we've gotten a lot of people asking us this question, and we've talked about it before. But let's get your perspective on it. So the Greedy Williams versus Greg Newsome training camp battle. You know, is Greg Newsome poised to come out of this thing and win that starting job? And is Greedy even healthy enough to, you know, really seriously compete for that starting job right away in camp?
I think, to me, this is the battle of training camp. What kind of physical condition will Greedy Williams be in? Can he become that high second-round pick he was drafted to be? Has his coverage skills diminished? Has he learned how to tackle? Then there's the rookie Newsome. When you draft a guy in the first round, that player is expected to start sooner than later. And the cornerback position is a position that a player can actually start in his rookie year. You agree with that?
Yeah. And we know that, you know, just from talking to you throughout the draft process and everything, post or pre and post, Newsome was kind of your guy. That was one of your dudes that you had pegged for the Browns.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, quarterbacks in college did not throw in his direction much his final 2 years at Northwestern. But that'll change in the NFL unless he shows that he can blanket a receiver. He runs a 4.38, so he had that going for him. The only time I ever run a 4.38 is when I hear the song coming down my street from the ice cream truck.
He's going to get a lot of balls thrown at him because playing opposite Denzel Ward.
And being a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that 4-2-5 defense will play a lot of players, though. Sometimes that fifth guy will be a cornerback, which will probably be Troy Hill. But some packages, it will be the loser of the Greedy versus Newsome competition, or mm-hmm. it could be another safety.
So many options this year. Compared to last year,
which is just crazy. You know what, you know, our GM Andrew Berry's done with the team, you know, for what the defense was. I know there was a lot of injury stuff like that, but the guys that we were able to bring in, I mean, it's a whole different team on that side of the ball.
It is, and it's 2 years straight now. You know, the year before was our offensive line was terrible. Barry, you just talked about that. So they went out and just completely fixed it. Last year, our defense sucked. Completely fixed it.
Yeah, talking about fixing the offensive line, it's now the number one rated line in the league by PFF, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
So
yeah, it is.
If you know, if they had the same plan of attack works on the defense, yeah. I mean, look out.
Yeah, but as far as the Greedy versus Newsome, I mean, if you had to pick one right now, Barry, that you just project to come out on top out of training camp, who do you think it's going to be?
Greg Newsom.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what we're thinking too. And I don't, did you talk about the health of Greedy? Is his shoulder even up to 100%? Probably not, right?
It's 100%. But, you know, he's been on mothballs for 12 months, and we'll just have to see. And it's healed. It's completely healed. Okay. And he can do what he wants to. Now, how will he do as far as tackling? How will he do as far as cutting? Will he be gingerly about that? A lot of times that happens when I have an ankle that ever since grade school, if I step in a hole or step sideways, I've sprained my ankle, and it's susceptible to that. And a lot of times in injury, you'll just think about things differently about how you walk or move. And with a shoulder injury like this, is he going to lead with that tackle? There are times that you have to lead with whatever is closest to the player and not think about it. So we're going to find out as far as his tackling. His cover skills have always been good, but both of them will play a lot. But if I was to put a starter in a 4-3, I would put Greg. I think he's going to win that competition, but both of them are going to play a lot, and I think we've got more than enough good players to fill all the roles that are needed this year and quality depth.
Depth is a big thing this year. I think, you know, if Greedy gets hurt, Newsom's there. If Denzel gets hurt, Greedy's there. We got JOK, who's kind of like the ultimate chess piece. There's, you know, we're not going to be playing Robert Jackson and MJ Stewart after one injury this year. So I think that's a huge upgrade on the defense.
True that. Absolutely.
Well,
you ready for an idiom?
Yeah,
let's hear it.
Okay. I'll give you a football. I have a complete list. I don't know how many is on it, but I've been compiling this list for about, I don't know, 15 years, let's say. And so I've got different football idioms, where they came from, who coined it, and why. Today I'm going to give you red zone. Now, we know the red zone is the area between the 20-yard line and the goal of the defensive team. So there's a red zone on each end. This was coined by Hall of Fame coach Joe Gibbs in a 1982 Washington Post article when he was head coach of the Washington Redskins. What happened was after the game, he was talking to a reporter, and he was explaining the ability to consistently score from the red zone as a key element for a team's success in that interview. And at one point, the Washington Post sports reporter, interrupts him and says, Coach, you keep talking about red zone. What are you talking about? And Gibbs explained that he considers from the 20 to the goal line, he calls that the red zone, and it's the most important part of the field to defend.
I'm not going to – that's super – I just kind of assumed red zone has just been there since the beginning of time. So that's super interesting. I had no idea about that.
No, 1982.
That's really not that much older than Justin.
No. Where's aging Justin today on the show?
I've been aged myself.
That's okay. Important.
So red zone's not just one of the most fun ways to watch football on Sundays.
No. Well, hey, nope, Barry.
Somebody made it up.
Right. That's awesome.
Well, hey, thanks for being with us again today. We'll get you out of here. We know you're in high demand today, so we appreciate you being back here with us, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your show always.
All right.
Thanks, Barry.
See you later, Barry.
Well, thanks again to Barry.
Yeah.
Coming on here, helping us out in the lull of the off season. And Barry's a great guy. He actually is the guy who sets us up with Brian and Chad, and he, you know, mm-hmm. Barry's just a great guy. So thanks again to him. Always coming on and doing a great job.
Yeah,
and
I was just going to say real quick, his insight about this training camp, you know, these headlines that we've been talking about over and over, and then kind of getting his perspective was very interesting.
Yeah, and you know, he has, you know, I don't think he has direct access to the Browns, but he definitely has closer access than what we have. So it's nice to kind of get that perspective a little bit closer to the team. Well, before we get out of here, you know, I kind of wanted to have just a little bit of roundtable discussion, you know, between us amongst the boys.
Okay.
So Gage on the Patreon, we like to get everybody's feedback from there. He threw us a bunch of questions for Barry, which we appreciate. I'm pretty sure we use some of them. This is one I kind of wanted to just toss out between us. He asked, who do we think will have the biggest jump this season? So I thought this was a good question to kind of wrap up the show. Because I was kind of thinking about this, who I was thinking about, but I'll let you guys go.
First player that just automatically jumps to my mind when I read this question is Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because the one of the questions that we wanted to maybe talk to Barry about today, we didn't have time, but was about the wide receiver three spot. And Rashard Higgins played really great last year whenever he was called upon to step up. But he's also is this his fifth year now in the league?
Somewhere in there.
And, you know, he's just never really taken that step. Depth to being like a consistent every week, like reliable wide receiver two.
I would say he did last year.
Okay. I'm saying, but as soon as you get Beckham back and Jarvis is out there with him, like now we're already questioning who's wide receiver three. We're not saying it's automatically Higgins. I don't know. You guys aren't.
I think it's Higgins and it's not going to be.
I think the flashes that we saw last year from Peoples-Jones, he looked the part as a rookie, which was very encouraging to see.
So here's my thing, little devil's advocate about Donovan Peoples-Jones. I think, you know, that we're talking about this big jump that he's going to make.
You're going to bring up his not having a 100-yard game type of thing.
I really like him. And I agree that I think he has a chance to be really good. I don't think we're going to see that him have that chance to be really good until Odell and Jarvis are gone. Everybody's healthy, he's not even going to see the field.
While you're looking that up, I read a very interesting article too, because I think that most of us, I know me and Josh are really, really high on Peoples-Jones going into this year. You too?
I think he's really good. I just don't think he's going to have the opportunity. Like,
correct.
I don't see him putting up big numbers this year because until OBJ got hurt last year, mm-hmm. Higgins was never even on the field.
I agree. Yeah.
So I don't think DPJ is going to get that much run.
But the thing is, that was a consistent trend with Higgins over the last few years is we were always saying, why is he not on the field?
Yeah, all he does is make big catches, and we were like, oh, maybe he can't get along with Freddie. You know, Freddie was benching him. The article I read, though, was Higgins was a lock for wide receiver three, and they were saying, who do you think is going to get more playing time between Donovan Peoples-Jones and Swartz? And I was like, I didn't even think that was a legitimate question. Well, I figured it was just all day Jones.
And we're talking about Peoples-Jones, like how he had such a great rookie year. He had 304 yards.
Yeah, but
it wasn't statistically.
It was the big plays,
the flashes.
Right, and you just got done saying, you know, he didn't get on the field because of the Odell Beckham, you know, until he got hurt. So, you know, his stats aren't going to be, you know, for all season long, obviously, because he didn't play on the field all season long. But the other thing that I think that why Donovan Peoples-Jones or even a Higgins could be more of a factor, even with Jarvis and Odell, is we really didn't see the Browns start to really pass the ball until midway through the season when they realized, hey, we don't got to just run the ball and throw on third down every single drive. Yep. You know, they finally figured out, hey, kind of throw the ball a little bit, and then now Nick Chubb has got only five guys in the box to get by rather than 10. So I think that, you know, that's going to be interesting. You know, obviously it's Higgins' battle to lose for that wide receiver third spot, but DPJ, you know, I'm not saying that he can't, you know, steal that spot. My biggest guy that I think is going to take the biggest jump, I'm going to go kind of a little bit different. I'm going to go defensive side of the ball, and I'm going to go Jordan Elliott at defensive tackle. He's the only Browns rookie to play all 16 games last year. Only ended up having 15 tackles. So a down year. You know, they just did an interview with him because he's pretty much fighting for a starting job at the defensive tackle position. We know we got Clowney. We know we got Miles Garrett. We brought in Tack McKinley. So we got some guys that are going to be really good that people are going to have to focus on the outside. It's going to free up Elliott, you know, to be able to try to disrupt. Now, I don't think he's going to go out there and have 8 sacks or anything like that, but be that run stopper, the guy, you know, that is getting through the line and just disrupting plays. I think he's going to play a big role.
Jordan Elliott this year kind of reminds me of, who was it that we drafted to be the guard of the future? And then he didn't work out. Corbett.
Oh, yeah, Corbett.
So remember going into the season, we're like, this is Austin Corbett's job to lose. He's just got to embrace this and really step up. and then he sucked.
Yep, he lost it.
That's what I'm kind of seeing. This is, it's prime for Jordan Elliott. It's his spot. It's prime for him to go get it. Now it should just be interesting to see if he can go get it. But I think he's gonna have a good year.
I could see it. Totally could see it.
He's gonna get a lot of one-on-one matchups. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
a lot. And he came in thinner, faster. Yeah,
and he's got a really good group of veteran defensive linemen in that locker room and on the field that help him.
Yeah. And he's got, I mean, we brought in Tagai. There's going to be people behind him pushing him. He can't rest on, exactly. Well, there's nobody else here, so it's just my spot. He's going to have to earn that spot. Mm-hmm. So what about you, Justin?
So I might surprise you guys here. And I might surprise you a lot. I'm going to pick a guy that kind of fell off the second half of the season last year, but I expect to have a huge, huge year. I'm going to say Myles Garrett. I know that that's kind of surprising to say that because he's done a lot, but he kind of disappeared last year after he got COVID. I mean, he's coming off of, you know, the year before he almost killed Mason Rudolph. Right? So, you know, I think, I mean, Browns fans love it, but I think the league's kind of forgiven him. He's, you know, I'm expecting him to have a monster year. I mean, I think Clowney is going to take a lot of pressure off of him.
It's an interesting take because, you know, Miles was already really, really good last year. But there's a difference between really, really good and, you know, I think you're kind of expecting defensive player of the year good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's still a big jump because he might, if he never got COVID, who knows?
Yeah, he was in the conversation.
He was in the conversation.
I mean, those first however many games it was, every game was a strip sack. It was just, you sit there and you wait, like, when's it going to happen?
Yep. It's coming. You knew it was coming.
Yep. COVID wrecked him last year.
It did.
Year.
Yeah. It wrecked quite a few guys, actually.
So. Yeah, and it was his biggest issue coming back from COVID was just being able to stay on the field for lengths of time. I mean, he'd be out there for one play and then he'd be off for the whole next series.
And he'd be huffing.
Yeah. I mean, and you're like, where's Miles? And he's over like getting oxygen on the sideline. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he's able to do. I like that. I like your take there, Justin.
I think I would be shocked if he didn't deliver. I think he, especially going into this year, I think the quarterback's going to have to hold on to the ball longer. It's not going to be like the last few years where we're like, oh.
Three-step drop, it's gone.
It's gone, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't want, if I was a quarterback, I don't want to throw towards any of those guys.
No, there's, and that's all the thing, playmakers you got out there. You got the sidelines covered, and the middle of the field should be pretty well covered. We've got great coverage linebackers and safeties in there
and
now.
And speed everywhere.
Exactly.
And playmakers everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. Myles Garrett.
He's about to eat.
Yeah, he's got superstar potential every single season.
Yeah.
One of the draft picks the Browns hit a home run on, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have the guy I've been thinking about ever since I typed this up last night. And then while we were talking to Barry, I thought of kind of like a 1A. So my 1A, I expect Odell to have a big jump.
Yeah, I agree with
you. I expect Odell to have a good year. I think hopefully he stays healthy. I think if he stays healthy, it could be a really, really solid year for Odell.
You're thinking 1,000 yards? What's a solid year for Odell in the Browns scheme?
Correct, yeah.
Obviously, he's playing for Kansas City. That might mean 1,400 yards. And
right, he's not getting 100 touchdowns. Receptions.
I was going to say 1,100 to 1,200 yards, 85 to 95 catches, 8 or 9 touchdowns.
I like that.
Yeah, and honestly, that now that you mentioned that, as far as somebody I think will take a big jump this season, I think Kevin Stefanski will. Because I think last year you saw the run game was pretty much consistent. Like they had that established. I mean, it's easier to establish that, especially if you've got the line in place, you've got the good running backs, all that stuff. That passing game from week 1 to week 17 completely changed. Yeah. It was so much different. So expect to see even more, you know, this season. I don't think the passing game, I don't think we've seen it all yet.
I completely agree. Yep. Completely agree. And then the guy who I had in mind when I was typing up Gage's question for me, it's on the defensive side of the ball, is Phillips.
Yeah.
Dude.
I think Phillips is poised to take a big jump in that linebacker spot. And, you know, Barry said he expects him to be a starter.
I don't disagree.
And I just think the kind of defense we want to play, that 4-2-5, and you got to be able to cover. I mean, we're going up against Mark Andrews. We're going against the Steelers just drafted a new tight end. Who the Bengals got?
For what? Which
for tight end?
Oh, they've got Drew Sample and I'll think of it.
But I mean,
he got hurt.
There's some guys.
Yeah.
But there's some guys, you know, we got to be able to protect the middle of that field. And we need a guy who, we talk about JOK going sideline to sideline. We saw glimpses of Phillips doing that last year as a rookie. He was one of the only people on the defense last year that kind of like popped off the
dude. In that Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It literally opening series. I was like, oh, he was everywhere.
Yeah.
And he was making huge tackles.
When the Browns drafted last year, I don't think any of us were really high on Phillips. We were kind of disappointed they didn't take Malik Harrison from Ohio State. You, Blake was really did really not like Jacob Phillips.
I was so mad.
And to watch him throughout that rookie season be the guy who jumped off the screen when you were watching football on Sundays was like, wow, this, okay, maybe we got a guy here.
Yeah, especially because I think Harrison's decent. So we need Phillips, you know, to step up to make the pain of not taking the Ohio State guy.
Yeah.
A little better, but no, I was super impressed with him, and I think he's poised to take that big jump.
Yeah. So there's just was there anything else you guys wanted to throw out there about guys taking a jump?
Go ahead. Well, so if you said a jump, and you said Kevin Stefanski. Mm-hmm. Hey, wouldn't it be nice to see Joe Woods not be on the hot seat? That was who I was. As soon as you said him, I'm like, it'd be nice to see him not be on the hot seat and not be criticized. And the thing is, with all that talent, if it's not a delivery, yikes.
Yeah. I just saw an article that I'm interested to see is what the Browns are going to do at kicker. That's kind of like the position we don't know.
We haven't talked about that.
You know, we haven't talked. Cody Parkey was good last year from 30 yards and in.
Yes.
You know, so that's kind of something I know we got. I think his name's Chase McLaughlin that was with the Jets. We brought him in to kind of push Parkey. I mean, let's just line him up for kicking 50 yarders and see who makes more. That's the kind of guy I want. But that's an interesting position because it's burned us so many times in past in close games where we're like, all right, well, it's 4th and 8. We might as well go for it because our kicker's got a 30% chance of making this one.
Exactly. I want a guy with a little bit of a leg because there were so many times last year that Stefanski was put into making a super tough decision that shouldn't have been a tough decision. You think if it's anything from like 55 in, Jim Harbaugh's got a tough decision?
No.
Nope,
no.
But Justin Tucker is also the top of the league as far as kicking goes.
Correct. And I'm not saying, you know, there's not like there's a Justin Tucker under every rock out there. But from 50 yards and in, NFL players should be able to be, I'm not saying they need to be 99%, but you should be able to trot them out with confidence.
Yes, confidence. That's the thing.
And I just don't think anything from like 45 out, I don't really have confidence in Parkey.
I don't want to be sending him out there with we got a 50-50 shot because if you're doing that, it's probably less than 50-50.
I don't want to, like, I think about the Ravens game on Monday night and literally Tucker went out there and it was like, 56? It was a stupid long kick and it was, as soon as you saw him put the helmet on, you're like, oh, it's over.
Yep,
turn, I'll watch it just to make sure that this is over, but you know it's good. I don't feel confident in Parkey making that kind of kick, especially, let's say, to advance in a playoff game or, you know, for us to go to the playoffs. I would not feel confident with him taking that kick.
I mean, what there was a game last year, I can't remember when it was, when we had Jamie Gillen come in to kick like the 50-something yard field goal.
It wasn't even like a crazy long field goal attempt. It was something. Yeah.
It was like a 51-yarder or something.
Yeah.
Not that an NFL kicker should be able to make.
Oh, we should go get Destroying off Instagram. He can make a 50-yard field goal.
But that's a kind of another guy, you know, the Jamie Gillen, the Scottish hammer, as his name is. He's like very liked by Browns fan, I think, just because of like his personality, his look. You know, he's this big, you know, muscular jack punter, but his stats really were, he was actually like, I think, ranked 24th or 25th in punting last year.
It's crazy.
So we went from having
one of the best
for like a 4-year stretch, and then we brought this rookie in. We thought he was going to be a big thing, and maybe he's a guy that has to take a big jump this year and do better at pinning teams inside the 15, stuff like that.
I'm a guy too that I like him, like you say, you know, because I like his persona and everything. He seems like a cool dude, but I wasn't impressed with him in the preseason. And then we kept him over Colquitt, and I was like, wait, what?
Right. Well, because I think his look about him, you're thinking, man, this guy can probably punt it out of the stadium.
He can boot it, but then it's like you only saw that every once in a while in the preseason. Then we just went with him because he can kick it far sometimes. I just didn't get it. I agree. I just don't want special teams. I know that everybody talks
about the worst
special teams are. Yeah. It's a third of the game. And people always say, especially special teams coaches will say, it's just as big of a part of the game as offense and defense, but it always gets put on the back burner.
Yeah.
But it kills you. If you're not good at it, it costs you games.
Yeah. I mean, how many times do we see like Brown score, right? Score a touchdown in a close game and they kick it off and the opposing team returns it to like the 40-yard line. You're like, well, there are two first downs from being in possession to score.
Or Brown score and we go for the kick and miss it. So, it completely changes the possession.
That's kind of the thing too, if you think about it, like throughout the course of a football game, I mean, if the defense has a bad series, bad play, they give up touchdown, then now the offense has to come out and kind of make up for that. Mm-hmm. If the offense goes out, throws a pick, fumbles, whatever, now the defense has to go out, make up for it.
Correct.
You don't want to have to also make up for bad special plays or special teams plays. Mm-hmm. So they kind of need to hold their own. So the other two can kind of balance each other out throughout the course of a game.
Yeah.
So real quick, I was just going to say, this is our last episode before training camp.
Man. Thank God.
Next time we sit down, we're going to have a couple practices to talk about. And
knock on wood, no injuries.
No, I was just going to lead into that. Like, we've been talking about depth and different players and stuff on both sides of the ball today. And I'm just praying for no injuries, because last year we did a whole episode on all the injuries that we had between one episode and the next. It was nuts. So, good juju out there, everybody. Just keep, I don't know, good thoughts for the Browns.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, 70, and the new jerseys dropped today.
Yeah.
Mention those. I know Josh is going to throw up a picture for everybody to see.
Yeah, throw that up.
Justin's already got one on order, right?
I ordered one at 2 o'clock in the morning last night. I was
here by the bye week.
Yeah, actually, I'll read this. I was joking around with Blake, and I'm like super excited. I'm like, man, can't wait to rock that. I'm getting ready to go on vacation, so next week is the last episode I'll be with the dogs. So I'm like, I'm going to rock that. I'm rocking that jersey next week.
Not forever.
The Justin Charles fan club out there was like, what? No.
So I was like, I'll rock that out next week. And I said, ooh, when is it coming? And I read it live to Blake. I said, this item is expected to be delivered by Wednesday, September 8th. Hey, NFLshop.com, what are we doing? I'm not even going to get to wear that thing to anything. I'm going to miss some preseason games, and I'm not even going to wear that thing. So,
right.
You know.
That's funny. I saw a thing today, and it said, for as bad as the Browns screwed up the new jerseys in 2015.
Okay.
They completely made up for it last year and now this year.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I love our jerseys right now.
Yeah.
Yes. I think the new ones, they just are sick, but like how we kind of went old school last year, but they kind of have a new feel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we did a whole episode on jerseys.
Our first ever episode.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got the blanket sitting behind Josh. I wasn't a big fan of those ones.
Yeah. I was really hoping too, with the white jerseys, that they were going to go all white helmet. I know Browns fans.
So nice.
Kind of just
nice.
Fainted, and I'm sure people are really mad at me because, got to keep those all white, all orange, but all whites would have been.
Yeah, the NFL is getting so, the NFL was very strict on what your uniform had to be, and they're starting to kind of loosen up. Now you can have different numbers at different positions. Now you can have
helmet. Yeah. Which, did you see for the Browns, the 75th, the helmet?
Yes. Yeah.
It's got the gray face mask and the white stripe. One
with
single.
The number.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're starting to loosen up a little bit on the rules of the uniform. So in the next coming years, it could get really,
20, 25 years from now, they might be able to wear different color cleats.
And not get fined for it. Yeah. And have your socks all the way up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The no fun league.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, we'll wrap this up before we ramble too long. Like he said, this is the last episode before we got some training camp. So thank you to everybody who's stuck with us all boring off season. Thanks to all the guests we've had on the show to help us pass the time. It wasn't super easy to come up with content all the time, but you guys stuck with us throughout the whole off season, so we appreciate it.
No, and let's play some fantasy football.
Yeah.
It's about that time.
Yeah.
And we're getting there.
Can't wait.
So thanks for checking out another episode of The Dogs. Big thank you to Barry Shuck from Dogs by Nature for being with us today. Make sure you head to dogsbynature.com to catch up on all of Barry's articles. They're all really good. Remember to head to jointhedogs.com to become a Patreon member and play some fantasy football with us this season. It'd be really cool to get at least one good 12-team league going. If we get more than that, we'll do more in one league. For everyone who's a Patreon member, we'll see you over on the Dogs After Hours. To everyone else, hope you guys have a good week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Dogs Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter at the Dogs Podcast, and become an official Dog Pack member and join the dogs.com.